This is Central Time. Flu season is off to a rough start. Cases are more than 12 times higher than they were in the fall of 2019 before the pandemic. That's according to some national numbers from the CDC. About five times as many people have been hospitalized so far than at the same point in any of the last 10 flu seasons. We're talking about the flu season, why it's already looking bad, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. Did you seek out a flu shot? Yet, anyway, have you had the flu this year? If you work in healthcare, are you seeing a lot of cases of the flu and RSV as well coming through your door? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Dr. James Conway is a pediatric infectious disease specialist with the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Dr. Conway, welcome back to Central Time.
It's great to be back with you, Rob.
I gave a couple national numbers there. What are we seeing when it comes to the flu here in Wisconsin so far?
Yeah, our numbers are pretty much mimicking what we're seeing around the country, but actually it hasn't even really hit here nearly as much as it has been hitting in the southern United States and along the eastern seaboard. We're gradually increasing, but pretty rapidly. We're certainly ahead of where we are most years, and I think that's what's got people most concerned, is that this curve is really going up and going up quite quickly.
Is this early for flu season? I think of it peaking, I guess, late in the year and then through January and February.
Yeah, it started out as an early season. You know, I think that you're right that the majority of the last 20 years, the peaks happen in January and February. But there are certainly some years where we have early seasons like we're having now. There's also seasons that, you know, start up fairly late. And so that's one of the reasons that we need to track this so closely, because this is certainly shaping up to be a rough one if it continues this way throughout the entire season.
Of course, over the last couple of years, this time of year, COVID has been the big story, and it's still around. Do you think we maybe are taking our eye off the ball when it comes to the flu, as far as, you know, being worried about catching what we might now think of as a lesser ailment?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things going on here. I think you're right. I think people have been so focused on COVID that they've sort of forgotten about both RSV and flu, both of which are bad actors. I think we're also seeing the impact of people lifting a lot of the mitigation that they've been doing. You know, we learned that masks and keeping apart and staying home when you're sick works really well for COVID, but it actually worked really well for RSV and flu too. And then there's this idea of this immune debt that we're paying back, that because people didn't get exposed to these things, there's not a whole lot of herd immunity out there that was caused by natural infection. And so we're really only dependent on vaccines, and vaccine rates, unfortunately, are running behind where they usually are this time of year.
I wanted to ask about the vaccines. I know every year there's kind of a prediction going on what are most likely to be the strains of influenza that come to us here in Wisconsin or around the country, I guess. How well do our vaccines match up with the strains that are driving up these numbers?
Yeah, interestingly, surprisingly, we actually hit it really right on the head this year. So far, you know, the majority of what's circulating is an H3N2 influenza A, and the vaccine strain is really a good match for what's circulating. So for people that are vaccinated, they actually are really very well protected. We have to remember that, you know, there's four different strains in the vaccines each year, two different strains of A and two different strains of B, and we usually expect to see at least a couple of them show up. So early season tends to be A, and then later season tends to be B. But so far, this is shaping up to be a very good match with the vaccines that are available.
Now, let's talk about kids and influenza. Kids were at less risk, not zero risk, but less risk than older people for COVID. Influenza, though, how much of a concern is it for younger folks?
Yeah, I think there's two big features. One is that they really do serve as the epicenter for transmission. You know, we've certainly learned that schools are a great place to transmit viruses, and then they can bring it home and share it with others. But kids also do have pretty significant disease when they can get flu. You know, many of them are fairly naive. They haven't seen flu before, and so they don't really have much immunity. And when they get it, they can get it pretty badly. We've already had a handful of deaths in the United States of healthy children who have died from flu already this year, which is much earlier than usual and really quite concerning.
We're talking about flu season with Dr. James Conway, pediatric infectious disease specialist with the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you a parent to younger children? How are you feeling about RSV, the flu? Have you seen them showing up in your schools? Are you seeking out vaccines? Have you done so already? What questions do you have about flu season this year? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking about flu season with Dr. James Conway, pediatric infectious disease specialist with the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. You can join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. Your experiences if you're seeing flu or this RSV pop up among especially kids in your neck of the woods, 800-642-1234. Dr. Conway, RSV, we've mentioned it a couple times. People are seeing it in the news. What is it?
Yeah, respiratory syncytial virus is a virus that is fairly devastating to premature infants. And I think that's really where the attention has been for many years. And so there's been ability with some, you know, very expensive products to try to protect them. What we've started to realize over the last 5 to 10 years, as we've been doing more respiratory testing, is that it's also a bad actor for the older part of the population. And in fact, there's some data out there that suggests that RSV is just as bad as influenza for that population over age 65. But it's very similar to all these other respiratory viruses, including COVID. It causes, you know, bad respiratory illness, it causes pneumonia, and then sets you up for secondary bacterial pneumonias because of all that gunk and obstruction that happens from the inflammation. Very contagious, as are both COVID and influenza as well. And I think one of the things we've been starting to recognize is that there are a lot of people who have been cooped up for a long time, get respiratory symptoms, may test themselves for COVID and say, oh, good, I'm COVID negative, and go back out about their regular business. And I think that's part of what's contributing to this rapid spread of both RSV and influenza throughout our communities.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Pat is calling from on the road. Pat, hi.
Good afternoon, and thank you for taking my call.
What'd you want to tell us about, Pat?
Okay, so one of my grandsons, who just started school this year, he ended up getting RSV. I mean, this is a child that was hardly ever sick, you know, until he started in school. It's like he just walked into a cloud. But what's really odd is my wife, everybody except me, got the COVID, and I don't know if that's just because of I'm outside and I'm in it all the time. I don't know. But somebody brought up the statement about taking a massive amount of vitamin D and zinc. Does that help? That's the real reason.
Gotcha.
That's the big thing I'm calling for.
Pat, thanks for the call. Dr. Conway, are there supplements that can help us? I think we all want there to be supplements that can help us avoid all these illnesses. Do we have any proven supplements in our toolkit that you'd point people to?
Yeah, unfortunately, you know, zinc, selenium, vitamin C, vitamin B, vitamin D, you know, people have really tried hard to find a good association with improved outcomes. There's a limited amount of data that for zinc and vitamin C that it may shorten the duration of the illness a little bit, but the data hasn't been compelling enough to really make it something that we recommend widely. You know, certainly people that are sick should make sure that they get good nutrition so that they can rebuild and fight these things off. And it is hard to eat and drink. So, you know, taking a vitamin supplement while you're sick is reasonable, but it certainly isn't necessary to take massive doses of these things. And obviously large doses can certainly cause harm as well. But we all wish those things were true, but unfortunately grandma just wasn't correct. Same thing with chicken soup. You know, it's a good way to stay hydrated, but other than that, there's really no magic to it, unfortunately.
Pat, thanks for calling. Best to the grandson, completely, hopefully, getting over this RSV soon. And Dr. Conway, let's talk about the kids now. When should a parent seek medical attention if they're seeing, you know, respiratory problems that, you know, maybe it could be COVID or flu or RSV?
Yeah, I think the key things we look for, especially in the younger kids, you know, rapid breathing is really one of the key features. You know, most people breathe 16 to 24 times a minute. So you'll see these kids that get these bad respiratory viruses that are breathing 30 or 40 times a minute. You know, that's certainly concerning. If that starts to impact their ability to eat and drink, that's another red flag that need to be looked into, because some of these kids need, you know, intravenous fluids. And then high fevers. You know, most of the respiratory viruses, flu and COVID and RSV, can cause some fever. But if you've got sustained fever, those really are worrisome for bacterial superinfections. The other thing is for people that have underlying immune deficiencies or underlying what we call comorbidities, you know, other medical problems that may be at increased risk for having complicated disease. You know, there is treatment for influenza. I mean, obviously we'd like to prevent it as much as we can with vaccines and people being judicious about going out when they're sick. But if you get influenza, you know, oseltamivir, or what's known as Tamiflu, is very effective, but it needs to be started relatively early in the disease. Same thing with COVID. Paxlovid, you know, works nicely to at least prevent people from getting very ill, but you need to start it within those first couple days of the illness. So those are other reasons that people should seek medical attention and testing to see if they can figure out what they've got.
Now, on the prevention side of things, we know we have COVID vaccines out there. We know we have flu vaccine out there. Is there something like that for RSV?
Not yet. I mean, for the premature infants, we have these monoclonal antibody injections that they get every month during the winter season called Synagis. Really inconvenient, very expensive product. And so it's really limited to these high-risk premature infants. But on the horizon, there are vaccines coming for RSV, in particular for the elderly, for people over the age of 65. We're anticipating that there's going to be a number of vaccines that are currently at the FDA being reviewed that are likely to be available sometime during 2023. And then moving forward after that, there's ongoing work that looks very promising for vaccines to give to pregnant moms at the end of the pregnancy to give the baby some immunity, and then even new vaccines that are going to hopefully come out over the next couple of years for kids as well. So I think people have realized for a long time RSV is pretty nasty, and there's been a lot of breakthroughs over these last couple of years in developing vaccines finally. These have been kind of a holy grail of vaccines in my world, at least now for onwards of 20 years. And so we're pretty optimistic that we're going to have some more tools in our tool belt.
On the behavioral side of things, Dr. Conway, what would you hope people do to help avoid getting the three illnesses we're talking about here and to avoid spreading them?
Yeah, it's pretty much everything we've been getting hammered with about through COVID, which is, you know, covering your cough, wear a mask if you do go out, if you have one of these respiratory illnesses. Ideally, try to stay home if you can. Certainly, everybody needs to be washing their hands. But I think we need to really, you know, continue to maintain some of this healthy respect we had for COVID for these other respiratory viruses and try to, you know, be fair to people. I mean, I know everybody's busy and needs to do their holiday shopping and, you know, is back to work in school. But I think we've all had to learn the lesson that if you're sick, you really owe it to others to try to stay home as much as you can and not expose other people. There's a lot of high-risk individuals in our communities that may have really bad outcomes, and none of us want to contribute to that. So those are really the key things that we need to all keep in mind.
And what's your current state of the art on when and where we put on a mask?
Yeah, I think, you know, certainly if you have any symptoms when you go out of the house, I think that's important. I think anytime you're in large gatherings with unknown individuals, you know, especially if you're a person who has risk of getting severe disease, you may want to consider it. But I think the key is anybody who actually has any symptoms and needs to go out, they really owe it to other people that they should be the ones wearing the mask. It really is trying to essentially cover your cough and your secretion so that you're not shedding these things all over the place. That's really, in many ways, the most important group, and not really the way we've been thinking about masks. We've been thinking about masks to protect ourselves throughout these last couple of years. But in reality, you know, there's a lot to be gained by protecting other people when you have to go out and have one of these respiratory illnesses. So, you know, I think everybody needs to kind of come up with their own strategy, but I certainly wear them in areas where I'm going to be around a lot of people, you know, airports or large gatherings indoors with people that I don't know, and I don't know how healthy they are, just to be able to maintain and keep myself from getting ill. The other good thing about masks is, you know, they do keep your hands away from your own face. And that's a lot of how people actually acquire these things. You sort of touch a surface that somebody's recently coughed or sneezed on, you scratch your own face, and lo and behold, you've exposed yourself to viruses. So there is something to be said, not only for just filtering the air, but also protecting your face from your own hands from contaminating yourself.
Dr. Conway, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Always happy to do so, Rob. Keep up the good work, and I'm a happy sustainer and always will be. So hope others are going to join the crew.
Fantastic. Thanks so much. That's Dr. James Conway, pediatric infectious disease specialist at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. He talked to us about flu season, shaping up to be worse than the couple seasons before the pandemic.